The Monologue.
So the battle against critical race theory continues. And in case you didn't see it yesterday, I highly encourage you to look up the speech made by Illinois concerned parent Ian Rice, who put together, I thought, an extremely eloquent rebuttal of critical race theory to the school board of the school that his daughter attends. But if you haven't seen it already, let's at least give you an update on what's going on. In Virginia, parents are decrying the Marxist critical race theory. They believe that it's fighting discrimination with more discrimination. You can't disagree with that. It's one of these things where if you're teaching young children something that is an advanced college-level course, which everyone that is acting as if critical race theory is not being pushed into the classroom right now has been saying, oh, we're not doing that. It's an advanced college-level course. We're just talking about systemic racism, you know, the buzzwords that you typically hear. If you are teaching young children about these things, and if these are the wrong teachers who are teaching, if there are good teachers, there are bad teachers, there's danger there. And there is the possibility of perhaps people looking a little bit differently at some poor kid who happens to grow up and have no control over the entire history of this country. In Arizona, we also saw that the governor signed a bill to prohibit critical race theory teaching. But things might not be so easy when it comes to blocking critical race theory, because we saw that 5,000 teachers across the country, many of whom are in this state, Washington, they are saying that whatever is said, whatever laws are passed, they are going to fight against this and teach this in the classroom, even if parents don't want it. And the thing that's a little bit more scary is that they are going to have the backing of extremely powerful teachers' unions if these things end up going to trial. So there's a chance that they could end up winning in court. So now we talk with Ashley Varner of the Freedom Foundation on the dangers of teachers instructing critical race theory, even with it against the law.
The interview.
Ashley Varner is the Vice President of Communication and Federal Affairs for the Freedom Foundation. She joins me now on the Jason Ranch Show. Ashley, how's it going?
Very well. Thank you so much for having me.
No problem whatsoever. You're fighting against something that a lot of people are fighting against right now. And I find it pretty interesting that more than 5,000 teachers, some of them right here in our backyard from Washington, have already signed a pledge promising to continue to teach critical race theory and social justice lessons against the state, which is interesting because there have been a lot of people that I think have been trying to put out there that actually critical race theory has not been taught in school at all. But that pledge seems to, first off, ensure that that's not going to happen going forward, but also imply that it already has been taking place.
You're absolutely right, Paul. What this pledge at the Zinn Education Project has revealed is that the American people have been lied to for months. When we were told, oh, no, it's just a legal theory that's only taught in law schools, this is not being taught to your children, we now have 5,000 teachers who are willing to put their names on paper with their city and state and say, I'm going to teach this whether the state legislature bans it or not. And something that's interesting, Paul, I've been monitoring this website all week. And early on during this week, the Zinn Education Project was publishing the names of everyone who signed and if they wanted to make statements in support of the importance of critical race theory. All of this was listed on their website. Yesterday afternoon, people got wind of it and started writing their own comments and putting their names down who were clearly in opposition to critical race theory, and they used very colorful language to make their opposition known. Yes. They overtook the website. They pushed down all of the supportive signatures, and this morning when I went back to check it, the website had simply taken off all of the teachers' names that had signed. So, but they are still claiming that they have over 5,000 teachers across the country that have signed this pledge saying they will continue to teach it regardless. And you are, I'm sure, not going to be surprised to hear that Washington State had some of the largest numbers of teachers per capita. I've spent perhaps too much time scrolling through all of these just to get an idea of what states were well represented. And California by far had the most that I could see. And then Washington and Oregon were competing for number two. So,
well, I'm not surprised by it, but nothing really surprises me anymore. And Ashley, I've only lived here for a year and a half after having lived in Texas and Florida. So I'm really confused about sometimes you just got to go where the work is, or maybe you just got to go on the front lines where things make the least amount of sense. And that's where I find myself right now. Did you happen to see Ian Rice's speech yesterday? He's a Black Illinois father who went on a very logical, yet at the same time, very assertive speech about why the job of his local school board is to teach math and science, not critical race theory, which you said just a moment ago is essentially a very high up, I would imagine very confusing for the average student from kindergarten through 12th grade, kind of course that's taught to people in graduate school. And he's saying, listen, let's teach the things that actually matter. And yet these teachers feel the need to push critical race theory into the classroom. If enough parents are in opposition to it, why do they feel this need to exert this kind of, I guess, authority on the future of our country and all these kids who are, honestly, seemingly innocent victims in this entire thing?
There's a lot going on here. There's a lot to unpack with that, Paul. And I didn't see the video. I would like to go take a look now. But what we have seen over the last year and a half with COVID especially is that teachers' unions have proven themselves to be political entities first and foremost. They are not prioritizing the education of our children and our future leaders. And so while we have these 5,000 teachers across the country who've said they're going to be activists regardless of the state law, we have many, many other thousands of teachers who do not agree with this, who don't think it's appropriate. And the sad thing is, for all of these anti-bullying campaigns that teacher unions promote, they're some of the biggest bullies in the country, right? And they have bullied so many of these teachers who are well-meaning. They do just want to teach their students, but they've been bullied into silence. And so that's why the Freedom Foundation works every day to reach out to these teachers to make sure they know they don't have to be a member of the union as a job requirement. They used to. But they no longer have to do that. They don't have to pay union dues. They don't have to fund these political agendas they don't support.
And that's great to hear. And, you know, as someone who grew up very fortunate enough to be able to go to private schools, this isn't something I had to worry about. But at the same time, when you take a look at every single school across the country, whether private or public, yes, you have some great teachers out there. You also have some teachers who aren't very good at their jobs. So trying to push this through every single one of these teachers, I'm sure that there are some who definitely are not going to be able to handle this kind of load.
Well, and you know what? This is a beautiful thing that is unintended consequences, Paul. Because teachers, because parents have been teachers now for a year and a half, they have had school in their living room at their kitchen table, and they have been able to actually monitor and see what their kids are being taught, what their teachers are telling their children, and they're appalled by this. So critical race theory, while it is very much intended to teach people to judge each other by the color of our skin rather than the content of our character, that is meant to divide us. But what it has actually done is parents have figured out what's going on in the classroom or on Zoom classroom. It has united parents across the country from all races, all socioeconomic backgrounds, and across political ideologies. They're saying, I do not want my children to be taught that they are either permanently oppressors or permanently oppressed. And that does give me hope.
I hope that hope continues, and I hope that we will be able to push back. And as you said towards the end, it's quite ironic that exactly what Martin Luther King Jr. was pushing for, to be judged on the content of our character, not the color of our skin, might not be something that happens in the near future in our very own classrooms. Ashley Varner, the Vice President of Communication and Federal Affairs for the Freedom Foundation, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thanks for having us. Always appreciate it.
No problem. And now this.
The Monologue.
Paul Gallant with you, Jason Rantz Show. So, this is a bummer. It's so hard for anyone to navigate through this city, to get things done that you need to be able to get done, like, I don't know, have kids return to school without stepping around the turds literally left by homeless encampments all across the city. And there's an example of this that the Seattle Times highlighted. The headline reads, Seattle Public Schools may have to find shelter for homeless residents of an encampment near the school. Yes, you heard that right. The school is going to have to find shelter for the homeless residents, which means that the homeless residents are going to get to stick around, basically camping on school property for quite some time. And this is, by the way, an area that has seen pellet guns that were thought to be actual guns nearby the school. Drugs, fights between campers. And staff at the school keep on filing complaints with the State Department of Labor and Industries. I mean, this is real safety concerns here. The problem is school district officials are too scared to just sweep. And look, I know that sweeps are frowned upon by the left, and I would imagine by a lot of people, but removing tents and people on short notice, that's essentially what a sweep is. For those who don't know, I'm learning these things on the fly. Without an offer of alternative shelter. And isn't that just ridiculous? I mean, we're talking about a school here. Who cares where they go? If they are choosing to voluntarily live in these encampments, why should it be the responsibility of the people whose property is being essentially squatted on to find the next place for those people to live? But that's what's taking place. The encampment between Bitter Lake and Broadview Thompson K through 8's playground is something that can't be moved because the school district is too scared to actually do what needs to be done. And this is why we're going to need, hopefully in the coming elections, actually strong leaders locally who are going to be willing to do what is necessary, even if it ends up being unpopular. If people are living in these places and they are not moving, and they have not gotten out of this encampment, which has been in place for quite some time between these two schools, when are they ever going to go? The answer, you know the answer. They're not going to move unless they are forcibly removed. And that's something that this school district officials that are in charge here of this school between Bitter Lake and Broadview Thompson, they got to do it. Toughen up. And now this.
The interview.
Joining me now on the Jason Grant Show is a candidate for U.S. Senate. Her name is Tiffany Smiley. Tiffany, thank you so much for joining the program today.
Great to be on. Always happy to share the good news.
And lots of good news your way. You're crushing it in funding all of a sudden.
Yes. Well, you know, it shows the energy of the people. And I say it's not just us raising it. People are energized and they're ready for a leader for their children's future and their grandchildren's future. And that's the energy that we're seeing, you know, especially as I'm a new candidate. I'm a political outsider. So to be able to step in the ring and raise that kind of money just shows that it's the people. And we're energized and ready for new leadership here in Washington State.
I can imagine that you're excited for the possibility, and obviously there are a lot of people who would love to see you step into that role, especially with some of the things that you care so deeply about, veterans, which is so important to you, also just jobs here in Washington as we slowly reopen in the wake of COVID-19, and of course something that we're dealing with seemingly every single day here in Seattle, the homelessness crisis and things like people throwing concrete onto highways or just guys climbing up into somebody's balcony with an axe and then being released essentially because they aren't competent enough to stand trial. So we're definitely looking for some changes here. And, you know, one of the things that you've been talking a whole lot about are jobs here in Washington. And what do you plan to do to help get people back on their feet as COVID-19 has really devastated so many industries, specifically here in Western Washington?
Yeah, you know, that I'm talking to people all across the state who are struggling, from small business owners to entrepreneurs to established business owners who are having a hard time finding eligible individuals to employ. So there's a lot of dynamics taking place. But number one, we need to get our national debt under control. I would like to know what Patty Murray's definition of infrastructure is. So I truly believe one of the greatest threats to our children and grandchildren's future and our businesses is our national security, is our national debt. So that needs to stop immediately. And then we need to give the power back to the people, back to the free markets, you know, opportunity. You know, and my husband was blind in a hospital bed, and I had student loan debt and a car payment, had no idea what our future would hold. I just resigned from my nursing job. What we had was the opportunity, and that was the opportunity to work hard. And right now, you know, I think we needed to help people through COVID, but we need leaders who have vision. So right now we're currently paying people to not work, and that's just not sustainable. So, you know, coming from where our family came from, it was the opportunity here in America and the willingness to work hard, and we need to revive that in our state. There is opportunity all around us, and we need to energize and encourage others to, you know, jump in the workforce and solve the problems person to person from the grassroots way, not the government down, because, you know, look, I think we're seeing that that doesn't work.
Right.
And those are the effects that we're feeling right now.
It's not just working hard. We also need people that are going to act. And I think one of the more frustrating things here with the homelessness crisis is that people seem very hesitant to finally step in. COVID-19's been the excuse for a long time, but with nothing changing and homelessness affecting many small businesses here in Seattle, that's something that's going to require tough action, and hopefully something that if you're in office, you're going to be able to bring to the table.
Absolutely. I want more business here. I always say we are such a unique state, and we've just been under the thumb of bad politicians. We have an opportunity to lead the nation and lead the world from our energy, our renewable resources, from tech, farming, trade. We're just under the thumb of bad politicians who want to control everything that we do. So it's clear that we have the resources here. We need to cut back on taxes. We need to cut back on the red tape and let the incredible people in this state innovate, create jobs, and work together to solve these solutions.
You've mentioned family a couple of times in this interview, and for those who maybe are listening to you for the first time, I want people to know about the fight that you made for your family. I think it's truly an incredible one with your high school sweetheart, Scotty, who fought in Iraq, who was blinded in Iraq, and you mentioned the fight that you had to make to get him the care he needed. You really care about veterans, and it's important that we have people who do fight for veterans in this country, because it is alarming, especially based off of your experience, the lack of support that some of these people get when they come back from overseas to resume life as a citizen.
Yeah, you know, I just heard of some veterans protesting outside of VA, and they said, you know, everyone cares about veterans until they don't. Let's retire Patty Murray. And I think it shows across the board, whether it's veterans or getting jobs back, getting the economy back, getting families back to thriving, children back in school, right? It's about funding the people, not the system. And that's what I came up to, you know, face with my husband when he was blind in a hospital bed, and I had to stand up to the Department of Defense and fight for a better way. Not only that, I was able to build a coalition of people who believed in that vision as well. And Scotty would go on to become the first blind active duty officer to continue service to our country. I was able to be a voice for him when he didn't have one, and for thousands of injured veterans and their families. And so that's what we're doing in Washington State today. Or, you know, we launched our campaign about 3 months ago, and we are building coalitions. We are engaging with people. We are finding the solutions right here. And that's the path that our family took. And honestly, it was an honor to serve our country. It's an honor to be in this space as a candidate and a voice for families in Washington State. I truly believe that we can create a thriving state that benefits all. It's just we have politicians who are self-serving and only focus on special interests in the wrong Washington. So, you know, it's amazing what you can do when you work together with others and you unify. You know, Patty Murray has gotten a long way in dividing, and people are feeling the pain of that division today. So it's time that we build coalitions to unify. That's the path that our family took. And, you know, we don't regret a single minute of it. It's an honor to serve this country. It's an amazing country full of opportunity and hard work and going the extra mile. Those values will never steer us wrong.
Tiffany, it's really exciting to talk to you. It's great to see the progress that you have made in fundraising, and I hope we'll be talking about you in Washington, D.C. before too long. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
And now this.
The Jason Rants Show.
Always glad to see Seattle radio host Jason Rants.
It's always a pleasure to watch you and a pleasure now to host you.
Jason, I just love your coverage of what's been going on in Seattle.
Jason, this is as bad as it gets in America.
Jason Rants, great to see you. Thank you.
Long Form, presented by Northgate Rare Coins and Precious Metals.
Joining me right now. Whoa, this is a familiar name. It's Jason Rants. Jason,
I don't
live
like,
from CPAC.
I don't like being introduced on my own show. It feels like I should have done the intro. What are we doing here?
Do you want to introduce yourself right now? You can go about it right now. Go ahead.
Okay. Welcome back to the Jason Rants Show here at CPAC. Joining me in studio is my fill-in host, Paul Gallant, who is now in charge. Go.
I love that fill-in word that you threw in there. It felt very much like a barb. It's been an interesting week for me, Jason.
I have to keep you in your place.
As I learn more and more about, politics and such, it's been quite fascinating. And before we talk about what's going on at CPAC, I really want you to help me figure out Shama Sawant, because now she wants people to vote for the Recall Act, and I'm a little bit lost here. I mean, is this just par for the course with her, the completely unexpected moves?
Well, no, I think it's a power move, isn't it? I mean, if she wants you to support a recall, it means she's confident that she's going to win. So it is kind of weird. I'm mostly focused with her right now with the police issue, with the recommendation that two officers be fired for breaking the law of trespassing coming from Shama Sawant, who quite literally trespassed to get people into City Hall, and no one seems to be saying anything.
Jason, that's the thing that I found most confusing, because I know there's been a recall effort for quite some time, and I'm just thinking to myself, wait a second, I mean, shouldn't this have already happened, because she legitimately, you know, went into City Hall after hours? And listen, if that's not going to get her in trouble, then how about violating Governor Inslee's important COVID restrictions? You can't have people risking their lives inside a building like that. So many
people could have died that night.
That's true. So many people could have potentially found themselves having a little bit of a cough or worse after the fact. So you mentioned that. I wonder if we are going to get transparency with those two police officers who have been recommended for termination after their appearances, if you will, on these still images that we have yet to see in Washington, D.C. on January 6th. It does not sound like we will be able to get a whole lot of transparency, at least based off of what we've been given thus far.
No, you're definitely not. So there's two separate issues here. Number one, those photos are not going to be made available until after the Laudermill hearing, which is basically the cops' ability to get in front of the chief of police and plead their case so that they don't get fired. Now, after that happens, when that's done, then the photos would be available to the public. But the problem here is those photos come from a video. So the FBI has the video and they're not releasing the video, which means that there could be information on this video that clears these two officers, or at least gives them a little bit more info that they could use for their defense. Now, obviously, the opposite is also true. All we have, though, are the two stills, which means that they can't even truly deliver a defense. They don't have access to all of, you know, the evidence, as it were.
We'll see how this one plays out. It's just...
Oh, no, they're going to get fired. They will 100% get fired.
You think so?
This is not going to end well for them, and it's all political. I have a significant issue with any process, even if they were guilty, but any process that takes away your due process rights. And they were all, every single officer who was being investigated, proactively investigated, by the way. There was no evidence to suggest that they broke any law. They were there on vacation, engaging in free speech. They were going to a political rally. But they were forced, under the threat of termination, to turn over personal documents, private documents, text messages, photos that were on their phones, itineraries, stuff like that, financial records. That is wrong. That means you basically, let's say you were guilty, you were giving the evidence to the investigating agency. That's the opposite of due process.
And based on my understanding of it, the one police officer who they couldn't figure out if he violated anything, he was the one that refused to turn in any of his documentation, his cell phone, and that sounds like he is now being actually charged with insubordination as opposed to anything that might have taken place in Washington, D.C.
You're going to get more of this probably in the coming days, if not maybe a little bit longer than that. I think they're going to hit these people with as much as they can, because they went out looking for a reason to fire these officers. And for them to come back and say, well, we couldn't prove that he was innocent, but we also couldn't prove that he was guilty, so we're going to just move on. Well, no, that means you're innocent. That's how it works. You don't have to prove you're innocent. You're supposed to have to prove guilt. And if you can't do it, that means they're innocent.
You are speaking on cancel culture at CPAC. Those two probably canceled, and that's unfortunate. And obviously, we'll see again how much details are released to the public. It sounds like we won't get many. But what's it like at CPAC, and what are you going to be talking about specifically when it comes to cancel culture?
So when it comes to cancel culture, we'll be talking about two separate but sort of connected issues. Number one, the more obvious cancel culture, where there is this movement to bully people into not feeling comfortable enough to defend their conservative principles and values on all sorts of different topics. That's the kind of stuff that is really, really obvious when we see it. We saw it this week with Toyota Project. The Lincoln Project basically coerced them into not donating money to a political campaign. We've seen people who have lost their jobs for taking mainstream political positions. But the other issue that I think is connected here is to cancel culture is CRT, critical race theory. I believe that part of the strategy of CRT is to indoctrinate kids into believing certain ideological positions. It is so much easier to indoctrinate a child to get them to think the way that you want them to instead of censoring someone and bullying someone into silence when they've already established their own political positions. So I think both of these are connected. I don't think people talk about CRT quite in that way. And so during my speech tomorrow, I will attempt to do that. Although, as producer Peyton will point out, I do not write any speeches. I come up with them on the journey to the actual venue. So for this, the walk from my hotel room to the stage is when I will sort of formulate exactly how I'm going to say stuff.
It's going to be hard because it's hot there, isn't it?
So hot. It's, you know what? It's not just the heat. It's the humidity. And I walked out of my hotel today and I was wearing light clothing. I was wearing a white thin shirt and some pants, and I was sweating the nanosecond I stepped outside. When I get away from AC, I just start to drip here. It's disgusting.
I've lived there. You don't even have it close to as bad as it can be in Houston at times. To go back to the things that you want to address when it comes to cancel culture when you speak tomorrow, I wonder if it is actually possible to reach some people who maybe are looking at this through a different prism. Obviously, there are some people who are so far left that there's no changing their opinions. But I know that for other people, they hear the words cancel culture, critical race theory, they roll their eyes, they don't listen any further. I'd imagine that there are some of those people who, if they listen just a little bit, could potentially, at the very least, start to see things the way that we do, and specifically with critical race theory. As you mentioned, it's something that's going to impress on young children basically how they are supposed to believe in what happened in the founding of their country, and as if the founding of this country is somehow completely different than the founding of every other country in the history of the world. You know, there's so many different histories we don't even teach when it comes to that. And I'm wondering if there is actually a way that we can reach some people that are rational so that there are more people pushing back against this.
Well, that's why it's so important to speak up, is because I think that if you give specific examples of how this stuff is being incorporated into a classroom or into the workplace or wherever, I think reasonable people will look at this and say, well, that goes too far. You know, the one positive in the homeschooling or the remote learning situation during COVID was that parents actually heard what their teachers were telling their kids. And they didn't have to hear it secondhand through their kid, who I'm assuming they would look at and say, I'm sure the teacher didn't tell you that you should hate yourself for being white and I'm telling you to destroy, dismantle the systems of oppression, stop it. But now that they're actually hearing it, it's changed their minds. And a lot of the parents who are showing up to some of these school board meetings, they're not conservatives, they're independents, they're Democrats, who just don't like the direction of education. And it's the same thing across the board. When someone who is a hardcore liberal starts to live next door to a park that's been completely taken over by the homeless and it becomes dangerous, and then all of a sudden you've got a bow and an arrow fight happening outside of your door, which happened in North Seattle
and Capitol
Axes
Hill.
And all this stuff, right? I mean, once you start seeing that, you start to change your mind because you're not thinking about it in the way of, oh, this is some conservative who's talking to me, trying to get me to side with them. No, they're experiencing something firsthand, and that's what I think changed minds.
Yep, there is certainly a reason that I am on this very station right now after your encouragement, yep. Jason. Now, I want everyone, and I've said this a couple of times yesterday, I also want to keep it going today. I encourage everyone to take a watch of Ian Rice, a black Illinois father who went on a logical yet assertive speech about the job of his local school board. It's math and science, not critical race theory, because he sounds like exactly the kind of person that you just described.
100%. And there's so many more people out there who think exactly as we do on these topics. And sometimes no one feels comfortable enough to have these conversations with their neighbors and their family and their coworkers. But the second that they do and they get that courage to do that, they realize, oh, I'm actually part of a really, really big club. And this big club all supports the exact same things. Now we just got to organize and make sure that we vote.
I think if you do it in the way that you described, you speak up, you'd be surprised by the amount of people that actually do see things the way that you do. And as long as you do it presented in a sound and logical way, people are going to hear it. And the crazies who might come after you, they are going to expose themselves as being completely irrational.
100%. 100%. I totally agree.
Jason Rance, appreciate you joining your own show so much from CPAC. Please stay air conditioned. That is the key to life in Texas.
Absolutely. Air conditioning is a human right.
Yes, it is. And now this.
The Jason Rance Show.
Once again, a story you can't believe is real, but Jason Rance of Seattle confirms it is.
Seattle residents are outraged.
Jason, tell us the state of the Seattle Police Department.
Jason Rance is with us. This is your story. I want you to take us all the way through.
Thank you for being the person to go in there and show us what's happening.
The Quick Hit.
Paul Gallant in for Jason Rance. So before we hit the road, I'm someone who is very big into the idea of free speech, especially when it comes to creating content. I think that we're getting into a scary place, and I'm glad that Trump has decided that he is going to sue Google, and that he is going to sue Facebook, and that he is going to sue Twitter because of them shoving him off all of their apps. It's bogus that they are doing that. But this is something that is at least almost happening in so many different places. Spotify is getting closer and closer to being like Twitter, like Google, like Facebook. And I get concerned when I see stories like this. I don't know how many of you guys listen to the Joe Rogan Experience. I enjoy the show. I will listen generally to any of the podcasts that he does with stand-up comedians. In particular, I really enjoy the ones that he does with Tim Dillon. It's a funny show. It's a show that doesn't take itself very seriously. The show's existence, though, upsets some members of Spotify. And this is the stuff that you see in Twitter and in Google and in Facebook. These guys in Silicon Valley who are so left of reality and who don't actually interact with anybody on a regular basis who we would classify as a normal person. These people get so upset with some of the things that are said on these shows that are largely being done for the purpose of entertainment for a very specific audience. Some people in the app Spotify are upset with some of the things that Joe Rogan has said over the course of his time, both before his time with Spotify and now since his time with Spotify. A Spotify employee wrote last fall in an internal networking channel, "I'm personally bothered by his transphobic comments, and I'm concerned with the way he might spread misinformation." That last part. Aren't you tired of people telling you, oh man, misinformation, God forbid we have that out in the open? As if we are so stupid that we can't determine what is and what isn't misinformation. And by the way, how much stuff out there is, do we even know is misinformation or not? Especially with what we've seen in COVID-19 over the last couple of months. We don't know anything anymore. At least it feels that way at times. But there are people in Spotify who don't want to hear what Joe Rogan has to say. It's only a loud minority, but sometimes it's just that loud minority. That is just enough to get people to eventually be silenced for good. That's how it starts. Another employee told Insider that it's only a loud minority of people who are outraged at Joe Rogan, but the numbers were sufficient in terms of people who were upset at Joe Rogan
to merit a town hall meeting in September to address what they felt Rogan's show was at some was at times anti-transgender. A request by some staffers for the Joe Rogan Experience to receive editorial supervision was denied by Spotify. Good, but who knows how long that'll last, leading Rogan to subsequently retweet a video mocking the employees for being oversensitive. 10 meetings have been held with various groups and individuals to hear their respective concerns. This is a podcast that's being done for entertainment, and there are people that are out there that are trying to shut him up. And there's a reason that I like Joe Rogan's podcast, because he doesn't shame people for having different perspectives, even if those perspectives are completely wackadoodle. There's a reason I like Barstool Sports for some of the same reasons. There are still some people that are fighting for the ability to maintain free speech out there. And that should be, as long as we are American citizens, things that continue from now until eternity. And it bothers me that there are some people, even just a small amount of people, who, on something like Spotify, which is, of course, an app to not only share music, but to share podcasts and all sorts of different ideas, it concerns me that there are people that work in those places that would like to prevent some people from even having the ability to communicate their thoughts via music, via yabbing like myself. So I'm hoping that those loud minority of people, that they eventually will, you know, hit the road. Now time for the last rants.
The last rants.
I like Ballard, but I'm tired of seeing poop, guys. I am tired of seeing poop everywhere I go. When I first moved here, I went to the dentist. That's right around the corner from my apartment. And they told me that the night before that someone had dropped a child off on land right outside of my dentist's office. I went on Seattle Reddit last night. Another turd dropped somewhere probably right nearby my apartment. And you know who's dropping these deuces? I really wish that something would be done at the very least about that. Can we at least have some, I don't know, sort of agreement? And if there's anyone who's living in an encampment right now, can you find a toilet? Can you find a bush? Can you at the very least not poop on somebody's doorstep? I like Ballard. I just don't want to step in actual human poop. I prefer to step in dog poop. Really, I would.